It's time now for another exciting adventure from the case files of one of the most brilliant minds in all of crime-fighting history, Nick Guy, Private Eye. When we left our heroes last time, they've been hired by Ramen Spaghetto, a member of the cast of the Glacial Palace Ice Opera House production of 19th Century American Poets on Ice. He was concerned about Christine Journay, another member of the cast.
Oh, and after I saw her skate that first night, I fell in love with her.
Miss Journay had become an overnight sensation when, just before showtime, she had to take over the role of Emily Dickinson following a sprained ankle from the ice opera star performer, Ostentatia Bland.
It was sabotage, I tell you.
With love in his heart, Ramen Spaghetto went to the dressing room of Miss Journay following the performance. But when he reached her door, he could hear that she was not alone. A man was in the room with her.
Oh, the mere thought that there could be another who would capture her heart is more than I can bear. I will allow my manservant Rudolfo to back me up on that. Rudolfo!
Oh, yes, sir. He is quite beside himself with envy that there might be a rival to his affections for her.
But the mystery surrounding Christine Journay goes beyond a secret suitor. First of all, prior to being hired only 1 week ago as the assistant to the assistant prop manager at the Glacial Palace Ice Opera House, Christine had never skated before in her life. But when she went out onto the ice, she became completely focused on her performance, which was extraordinary. In the midst of these mysterious mysteries, another arose when Christine Journay approached Nick Guy, stating that she wanted to speak with him. But once they were alone in a room, they heard someone just outside the door. When Nick Guy went to investigate, Christine jumped him from behind and threw him to the ground. She then fainted, and when she came to, she seemed to have no recollection of what she had just done.
Oh, I can't explain what happened. I would never do anything to hurt anyone.
But that brings up another mysterious mystery.
Well, that's right. Nick Guy and Dr. DeSoto, in a conversation with the Ice Opera House's resident organist, Gustav Griminov, heard about the legend of the Phantom of the Ice Opera.
Many stories are told of the Phantom. He roams halls of the Glacial Palace Ice Opera House, appearing wearing black cape and mask. His mask looks like skull, and to be sure, two beady little red eyes.
And to make this mysterious mystery even more mysteriously mysterious, a person fitting that very description has been seen recently at the Glacial Palace Ice Opera House. He was seen when Mr. Peavy, the equipment maintenance manager, was pushed while he was on a ladder changing a light bulb.
That's right. I sprained my wrist, too.
And I saw him outside of the room I was in with Miss Journay, just before she jumped me from behind.
And as our last episode ended, Nick Guy and Dr. DeSoto, sticking around after the Ice Opera House had been closed up for the evening, looking for clues, saw someone prowling just near the costume and changing room. We pick up the action now as we hear Nick Guy speak. Whisper.
DeSoto, let's sneak up on him and take him by surprise. I want to get my hands on this supposed Phantom of the Ice Opera and finally get some answers.
We slowly approached the prowler, who seemed unaware of our presence. When we were right upon him, we caught him from behind.
Ah! Wait, look who it is!
Ramen Spaghetto, what are you doing here?
I'm stalking Rudolfo, my manservant.
Why are you doing that?
Because he's stalking Christine Journay, the love of my life.
Why is he doing that?
Because she's acting very suspiciously. I think she's meeting up with her secret boyfriend.
Just then, Rudolfo, Ramen Spaghetto's manservant, approached.
Master Spaghetto, I heard you scream. Is everything all right, sir?
I don't believe I screamed. It was an exclamation of surprise.
No, sir. It was definitely a scream that I heard.
I believe we shall change the subject.
What exactly is Christine Journay doing that you find suspicious?
Well, she has been furtively wandering through the corridors and the halls of the building. It's like she's looking for something.
That does seem odd. I wonder if...
Oh, no, not again!
That sounds like Mr. Peavy!
We quickly rushed to the sound of the crash and Mr. Peavy's voice. We found him lying on the ground with a cabinet on top of him.
Mr. Peavy, are you all right?
I'm lying here with a cabinet on top of me, and he asked me if I'm all right!
We lifted the cabinet off of him.
Well, now you can ask me if I'm all right.
Are you all right?
Well, I think I might have bruised one of my ribs.
What happened?
Well, I was moving this cabinet here when I heard someone coming. It was that young girl, Christine Journay. So I said hi to her.
Did she respond to you?
No, I don't think she saw me. It looked like she was concentrating on trying to find something. Looking all over the place, poking and prodding and saying, I must find it, I must find it. Then the next thing I know, this cabinet comes falling down on top of me.
Well, do you think someone pushed it over on you?
Well, just as I fell to the ground, I did see that strange person with the black cape and the mask that looks like a skull. And he had those same two beady little red eyes. And then there was that smell. Obviously, he still hasn't taken that bath that he needs.
That's very interesting.
Well, this is the second time that rascal has been around when I've had an accident. I'm beginning to not like him too much.
Well, I'm beginning to think that this caped and masked phantom is at the bottom of all the strange things happening around here.
The next day, Nick Guy and I approached Miss Journay about what had happened, but she claimed to know nothing about any of it.
I'm afraid I don't know what you're talking about.
But Mr. Peavy is quite certain that he saw you, and Ramen Spaghetto and his manservant Rudolfo saw you as well.
This is all so confusing, and a little frightening as well. I would really like to talk with you, Nick Guy. Oh! There's a call for rehearsal. I do want to talk with you. Tonight, after the performance, Monsieur Ravizelli is hosting a cast masquerade party. Oh, please come. We can talk there. Please, Nick Guy, please.
All right, everyone, let us begin with scene 7. This is where Henry Wadsworth Longfellow and Emily Dickinson are discussing the merits of John Greenleaf Whittier's Skipper Ireson's Ride. Tony Bland, you, of course, as Longfellow, will be on the far side of the rink.
Fare thee well, my fine feathered friend, and allow thy shanty to tarry evermore.
I never understand a word that man says. And Miss Journay, you, as Emily Dickinson, will start at center rink.
Of course, Monsieur Ravizelli.
Now,
Not so fast, Mr. Ravizelli. As you can see, I'm quite recovered from my sprained ankle, and am ready to once again take the role of the Bard of Amherst, Massachusetts.
Oh, but ostentatia, you cannot possibly have recovered so quickly. Besides, I believe we have already decided that upon your return you would be cast in the role of Elizabeth Oak Smith.
Oh, but surely a man of your insight can see that it would be a waste to utilize my talents on a lesser poet in a lesser role.
Oh, Monsieur Raffaelli, maybe Mademoiselle Blonde is right. After all, I've never skated before, and she has such great talent.
I'm beginning to like this girl.
Oh, nonsense, my dear Christine. You are a truly natural talent. Your performances have been spectacular. You have been beyond excellent. You will become the star of my whole ice opera.
Oh, please don't tell me you're serious about that.
I am afraid, ostentatia, that I cannot, in good conscience, allow you to take to the ice this soon after your injury.
Nonsense, Mr. Revzeli. Watch this. Mr. Griminov, music, please. And now, behold with what skill and deftness I perform. Oh! Oh, the pain! Oh, the pain!
I don't believe that's the line, my dear.
She's fallen on her sprained ankle. Let's get her off the ice and back into her dressing room. Quickly! Someone, call for the doctor!
I think you did quite well, my dear. At least up until you fell and re-injured yourself, that is.
Mm-hmm. Ostentatia Bland was taken back to her dressing room and a doctor was called to reset the splint on her ankle. The remainder of the rehearsal went quite well.
And Christine Journay was extraordinary.
Tony!
Did I say extraordinary? I meant just ordinary. There is nothing extra about it.
What was that?
I meant less than ordinary, of course.
That's what I thought you said.
I should learn to limit my speaking to the recitation of lines. It's much safer.
That evening, Nick Guy and I entered the Glacial Palace Ice Opera House to attend the masquerade party Mr. Raffaelli was holding for the cast. Not being too keen on dressing in too drastic of costumes, we each wore a simple black mask over our eyes. As we walked to the ballroom, we saw Gustav Griminov, the Glacial Palace Ice Opera House resident organist, coming the other direction and talking on his cell phone.
Exactly. Guston won $500 on Natasha's leap in fourth race.
Fractured leg? What are you talking about?
I know all about the story of her fractured leg. Me think all fracture fairy tale. Place bet for me, you see.
Alright, on you.
Guston Griminov, aren't you going to the party?
I think I not attend, Nick Guy. I must practice on organ. I have new song to learn, but you have fun.
We continued on to the party. When we walked in, to our surprise, we discovered that everyone was dressed like the Phantom of the Ice Opera, everyone wearing a black cape and a skull mask.
You think I didn't anticipate that? Of course I anticipated that. But Rudolfo, my manservant, insisted that this costume would be unique.
I beg your pardon, Master Spaghetto, but you were the one who insisted that it would be unique.
No, it was you who insisted. And that's an order.
Yes, of course, sir.
Even Douglas Mountbatten III got out of character as Henry David Thoreau for the evening and engulfed himself in the character of the Phantom of the Ice Opera.
I am the Phantom of the Ice Opera. One wonders what mischief I may be employed in this evening.
Ah, I see that Guston Griminov is practicing that new piece that we'll be adding to the show for our Good Friday performance.
Ah, so you are still intending to have a Good Friday performance, Mr. Raffaelli. I am in agreement with my dear wife, Ostentatia. We should cancel that show in honor of the Christian High Holy Day.
I don't care anymore whether there's a performance or not, since I will not be a part of it either way.
As I said, I am in agreement with my dear wife, Ostentatia. I don't care any more either.
Well, it hardly seems worth the effort to commemorate something like Good Friday anyway. Oh, I guess the crucifixion serves as an effective moral and ethical lesson of some sort. The self-sacrificing power of love and all that.
But the crucifixion was not just a sentimental example of love. Jesus Christ, in going to the cross, was a holy sacrifice that atoned for the sins of men.
Well, as the Apostle Paul wrote in Romans chapter 1, verse 16, I am not ashamed of the gospel, for it is the power of God for salvation to everyone who believes.
As I understand it, in the cross God reveals the fullness of his nature and character. The cross was necessary because of God's righteous judgment against sin. Sin could not be overlooked or ignored. God's holiness, his justice, demanded a sacrifice for sin.
The cross reveals, quite explicitly, the tragic consequences of our rebellion against God.
But the cross also reveals the depth of God's love.
We were dead in our sin, with no hope for redemption by our own works.
So God did for us what we could not do for ourselves. In the cross, Jesus took upon himself the penalty for our sin.
2 Corinthians 5:21 tells us, For our sake he made him to be sin who knew no sin, so that in him we might become the righteousness of God.
And this Jesus did willingly.
As Philippians 2:8 tells us, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross.
Without the cross, salvation would not have been secured. Without the cross, mankind would remain dead in their sin. Without the cross, no one could possibly know God.
Rudolfo, where did you learn all of this?
I've been doing some reading in my spare time, sir.
It was as this discussion came to an end that we noticed that Christine Journay was standing by the door, looking quite uneasy and motioning for us to join her.
Oh, Nikai, I need to talk with you.
Well, yes, of course.
Oh, but not here. Follow me.
We followed Christine Journay down the darkened hallway. She led us into a small dark room and closed the door behind us.
Nikai, there is something very strange going on with me. I don't understand it. Just a week ago, I was working as the assistant to the assistant prop manager, and now I'm the star of a major ice opera production. But how could this happen?
From what we understand, prior to working here at the ice opera, you had never skated before in your life.
Never. But here I am, able to skate beautifully. I can't explain it, but when I am on the ice, I feel something mysterious, almost magical come over me. It's as if someone else is controlling my body and I'm just watching it happen.
How is it that you even came to work here?
Well, I grew up in a very small town. My parents both died when I was very young. I was sent to live with my aunt. And one day, the Barkum and Bailiff Circus came to town and I went. It wasn't a very successful circus, except for one act. They had a magician who called himself Eric the Marvelous.
Eric the Marvelous?
He was actually Eric the Marvelous, but the princes misspelled his name on the marquee, and Mr. Barkum, one of the owners, never had it redone.
We're on a rather tight budget here. We can't afford it.
So he remained Eric the Marvelous. Although there is a typo in his name, as a magician, he was very marvelous.
Watch me pull a sandwich from out of my hat.
For one illusion, he needed a volunteer from out of the audience. So I raised my hand.
Ah, young lady, you will do.
I assisted him in making a handkerchief lose its spots. I was so impressed with his ability and the art of illusion that after his performance, I told him so. It turns out he was equally impressed with my ability to assist him in the art of illusion. He told me he thought we worked really well together and offered to take me on as his assistant. That was all I needed to hear, so I joined him that very day. We traveled throughout the country with the circus, mostly small towns playing at block parties and parking lot carnivals. I always felt that Eric the Marvelous should break away from Barkum and Bailiff. He was too great of a performer for such a small circus like that. But he would never leave. Whenever I would ask him about it, all he would say is,
I feel quite strongly compelled to remain just where I am.
One day, Eric the Marvelous decided to expand the act by getting into mesmerism. You know, hypnotizing people. And that turned out to be a disaster. The first night he tried it out on a live audience, he got the wife of Mr. Barkum, one of the partners in the Barkum and Bailiff Circus, to come up and be hypnotized.
Look into my eyes.
He got her into a spell and had her thinking she was a chicken. She was running through the audience, clucking and pecking. It was actually pretty funny. But Mr. Barkum was not amused. He told Eric to snap her out of it, but he couldn't. She kept right on clucking and pecking. She even tried to lay an egg. Understandably, Mr. Barkum was not too happy being married to a chicken.
Say there, what have you done?
He fired Eric the Marvelous right on the spot and told him he would never work as a magician, ever, anywhere. And then he said something that sent a shiver down my spine.
And don't you ever return, or else you know what will happen.
Or else you know what would happen? What would happen?
Oh, I don't really know, but Eric the Marvelous left that very night.
And you didn't go with him?
Oh, I wanted to, but he said Monsieur Barkum wouldn't allow it.
I don't understand. Why would Mr. Barkum not allow it?
And by what authority could he make such a demand?
I have no idea. So Eric the Marvelous and I parted ways that very night. But I'll never forget what he said to me just before he left. He looked intently into my eyes and said there would always be a part of him that would be a part of me. It was strange, but also rather touching, and I've never forgotten it.
So what became of him?
The last I heard, Eric the Marvelous was working as a door-to-door hamster salesman, and Mademoiselle Barkham is living on a farm in the Midwest. She spends her days pecking and clucking in the barnyard.
And what did you do?
I wasn't sure what to do. I worked a number of odd jobs here and there. And then one day, while I was working as a waitress, one of the customers showed me this job listing for the position of assistant to the assistant prop manager here at the Glacial Palace Ice Opera House. I don't know why exactly, but I felt compelled to apply. I don't know, I guess the entertainment business is in my blood. I applied and I got the job, and the rest of the story you already know.
Well, that's a very interesting story, but it doesn't seem to have any bearing on how it is that you can skate so beautifully when you've never skated before in your life.
Hey, you!
What's that? Oh, that sounds like Mr. Peavy.
Maybe he's having another encounter with the Phantom of the Ice Opera.
We ran out of the room and into the direction of Mr. Peavy's voice. When we found him, he was standing in the middle of the ice rink.
Monsieur Peavy, are you all right?
Oh, I'm all right. It's just that I saw him again. That fellow with the black cape and the mask that looks like a skull. He was right over there by those mint dispensers.
But Mr. Refazelli is hosting a masquerade party. Everyone is dressed up with a black cape and a mask that looks like a skull.
Oh, no, this was no masquerade. This was the real thing. It was those eyes, those same beady little red eyes.
Oh, well,
and he smelled, too. You know, like he needs a bath.
Well, yes, I remember.
Well, there is one thing that is different, though.
What's that?
Well, he didn't push me over or push something over on me. At least this time he didn't injure me in any way. Uh-oh. Hear that music? That can't be good. Is that the ice cracking under me?
Yes, it is.
Oh, not again!
After we pulled Mr. Peavy out of the broken ice...
Wouldn't you know it? I stubbed my toe!
We interrogated everyone who had been in attendance at the masquerade party, and everyone had a solid alibi, including Douglas Mountbatten III.
But, sir, I am the Phantom of the Ice Opera. I don't know anyone named Douglas Mountbatten III.
But you're not the Phantom of the Ice Opera. And you're not Henry David Thoreau, or Robert Frost, or Walt Whitman, or Rudyard Kipling. You're Douglas Mountbatten III.
Douglas Mountbatten III? Are you quite certain?
Of course I'm certain. That's who you really are.
But I don't know how to play me.
What about that upstart of a young girl? Christine Journay. Can we account for her whereabouts? Wouldn't it be wonderful if we can't?
Well, the only one not at the party was Guston Griminov.
But Guston was playing the organ. I was having practice for the new song.
Well, that's right. So everyone is accounted for.
You leave only one alternative, Nick Guy.
What's that?
Perhaps the Phantom of the Ice Opera is not just a legend after all. Perhaps he is not a myth. Perhaps he exists.
Well now, how can all of this be explained? Is the Phantom of the Ice Opera more than just a legend? You'll want to be with us next time when we hear Guston Griminov say...
What did I tell you?
So be sure to join us again next time for another exciting installment of... Nick Guy, Private Eye. Ward Stang speaking.
Nick Guy and the Phantom of the Ice Opera Affair was written and produced by Frank Yulee with Rebecca Bradford and features the vocal talents of John and Rebecca Bradford, Ethan Maynard, and Frank Yulee. To find out more about this topic or the Nick Guy Private Eye Apologetic Series, visit our website at nickguy.net and discover that sometimes the most amazing things must be true.